Hi, everyone, and welcome to Team Early Childhood Podcast. It's great to see you all again, and I hope that you're enjoying the podcasts. I'm Aaron Bradbury. I'm the interviewer for Team Early Childhood. And this week, we've got Sid Badham, Managing Director of a private nursery and preschool in North Devon. Hi, Sid.
Hello. How are you doing?
I'm all right, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, all good, thank you.
How's it going?
It's good.
Well, I normally ask people that and then they go, well, it's going.
I think that's a good way to describe it, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, it's great to have you as our, I think you're number 14, actually, on our podcast. Yeah, well, Caroline Silberfeld was 13, so she got the short straw, I'm afraid. Yeah. But you're number 14, so all is good. Okay, Sid, so everyone knows that we ask basically five questions, and the end question is always the same. But Sid, tell us a little bit about yourself and explain your kind of situation, how you became, you know, the manager, the director of the nursery, and also being a male in the early years as well. So try and cram all that into the first question.
Yeah, I'll try and cram all that in. Okay. I'm Sid. I'm managing director of a private nursery and preschool in Devon. We're situated on a working farm, the most beautiful environment. We're surrounded by, you know, fields and cows, and such an amazing environment for children to sort of grow and develop in. I feel very privileged to be here. It's where I started my early years career 14 years ago. So I worked here for 10 years and then decided to move on, as there was no scope for sort of moving up the ladder. So I went and did some different bits at different early years settings, very different early years settings, just to get a bit more experience. And the opportunity to come back as a manager, and I had to take it because, you know, I've worked here for 10 years. It's where I started. I've always had visions and ideas of how I want to go and move forward. So to be the manager and be able to do that is, you know, I feel really privileged to be able to do that. And then obviously I've become director in the last few months. During this pandemic, people think that I'm absolutely mad. But again, it was an opportunity that I can't not take, you know. I've worked really hard over the past 14 years, and so lucky to be in this position. And it has been tough 14 years, like you said. You've mentioned men in the early years, and it's still a big stigma, and it has had some real tough times and some tough conversations with parents and staff. And you know, I think it's always going to be an issue, I think, for quite a while. And I have been out and trying to promote men in the early years. I've been out to schools that are local and try and talk to, you know, year 11 students about their options. And I think it is just it's just seen as a woman orientated sector. I'm trying to get away from that, I think, really, but.
Well, they're definitely growing. Men in the early years are slowly growing. And it's great to have you on here advocating for men in the early years. And it shows that actually 14 years, you can make a career out of it. And ultimately, after 10 years, you know, you go on and you come back and you've now become a manager and a director of your nursery. And it shows that actually that scope is there.
Definitely.
I mean, one thing that I am going to be, I am really interested in, which I didn't know about your nursery, is that it's on a working farm. So how does that work?
The building where the nursery is, it used to be some squash courts a long time ago. And the people who own the farm, their sort of family took it on and they've turned it into a nursery. And then we've just built it from there, really. But yeah, there's basically a working farm around it. The children are right next door, right in the middle of it. We've created a viewing platform so they can watch the cows being milked. You know, the fields are full of animals. We normally have animals in through the summer, but because of COVID, we haven't been able to do that this year. But
right.
The children have that responsibility, so they're allowed to look after their own lambs and their own chickens and their own ducks. And
wow.
So yeah, it's a wonderful environment to be in.
Yeah, I bet.
The children, I think it's just where we are in the middle of Devon. You know, it's a very
yeah.
It's a very agricultural kind of environment anyway. So yeah, the parents absolutely adore it, and so the children as well. So.
And do the children have access to the, like, obviously to the fields and the farm? Are that, do you take them out into the farm? And
yeah, so our main real ethos of our setting is being outdoors. So we're a forest school setting. We've got our own woodlands, and yeah, we're outside pretty much constant, you know. Regardless of the weather, they go for walks down the lane, they go to walks to the barn, and they see the cows, and they're allowed to go in the fields. I obviously check with the farmers beforehand, you know.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Just in case the ball was out, you know. We don't want that situation happening. But yeah, it's, the children are fully involved in, you know, the work and farm element. It's really, I feel very privileged to be able to, you know, be part of it. It's,
it all kind of makes sense, because ultimately, if everybody knows our kind of like Twitter communication, I a couple of months ago, I saw you singing to some cows, and it kind of now makes sense why you were singing to the cows, because they actually are on your nursery side. I've got a bit of a story to tell you about cows, actually, because I'm petrified of cows. And I was just about to say, oh, Sid, when all of this, you know, when people are actually allowed to move and, you know, we can actually go out and I want to come down and visit your nursery, if that's okay, and come and say hello. I'd love that. But I'm petrified of cows, and here's why. When I qualified as a teacher and took my class to Wales, we went into a field, and the cow kind of picked on me, and it started running towards me. Now, I'm screaming, running through this field. The children are all just standing there as if to say, Mr. Bradbury, what on earth are you doing? Ever since now, the cows just stare at me, and I just think, I ain't going in there. So you'll have to help me overcome my fear.
They can sense your fear, Aaron. That's what
can they? I'll have to get a guitar and sing to them. That's what it is.
I don't have to. I don't go out and sing to the cows every day, by the way.
Oh.
Just to, you know, it was just a spur in the moment, that was.
Oh, no, can I just say, you've shattered my illusion now. I actually thought you went out and sang to the cows daily, and I know
we do
so
quite
many old. Others. I know many others think that you do that as well.
Yeah.
So let's get down to the nitty gritty. So, as you know, you've talked about being the director and the manager, and ultimately, you've already kind of alluded to that people thought you were quite silly becoming the director at such a crisis moment, really, in the country.
Yeah,
but obviously. In the early years has its own difficulties on a day-to-day, but more recently and it continues to have these difficulties.
Mm-hmm.
Could you explore some of these for our listeners and explain how you've overcome them and what you've done to be able to overcome them as a director and manager?
Yeah, so I mean, the early years sector itself is, you know, it's had its difficult moments, and we feel a little bit out of the loop of the whole educational sector, and that's the whole problem, I think. And it does make it really hard. You know, we're not supported enough, and especially like with the funding and financially, and it does make it, you know, very difficult. And then obviously, you know, the national pandemic that's going on at the moment.
Yeah,
like you said, people did question why I was taking on a director role during what is, you know, a real crisis at the moment. And as I've alluded before, you know, it was just something that I could not take. You know, I've worked so hard over the past 14, 15 years to have that opportunity. You know, it was something I could not take, really.
And what about, obviously, since you've kind of, I mean, you were the manager before, so even just being the manager, and then becoming the director. How have you kind of managed that transition and obviously the pressure that kind of comes with that? So is there anything that you could give maybe to some of our listeners who are managers and directors, how you deal with that on a day-to-day basis?
You've got to look after yourself. You've got to think about your own well-being. It's so important. You know, you're constantly checking in on your staff, your parents, your children. Sometimes you do need to take some time for yourself, because it's tough. You know, it's a saying, isn't it? It's tough at the top. After so many elements of your work that sometimes you think, well, who's looking after you?
Yeah.
And so you need to find that aspect of, you know, how you can look after yourself. You know, for me, it is, you know, that I go outside a lot. I go for walks. I like to go and see, you know, the sunrise. I do like to go down the beach. I do like to get my guitar out and sing to cows.
Yeah, I was waiting for that one.
that's my way of sort of escaping. And
yeah,
a lot of leaders and managers and directors get so caught up in the work, you know, that they never leave it. You know, they're taking it home with them. You know, they're doing it at the weekends. And there's so much work to do, but I think it's far more important for your own emotional well-being that you go into work on Monday morning feeling refreshed and feeling, you know, happy to be there, because you don't want to get yourself run down. And it, like you said, it can be really lonely, and especially during lockdown, because I only had three staff in, you know, myself and two others, because we were just looking after the key worker children and vulnerable children. And it felt so lonely sometimes. And you do need to find that escapism, that where do you go, who do you talk to? And that's where that Twitter community has come into play. Yes. You know, I couldn't have done anything without that community. You know, they saved me so much during lockdown. To be able to branch out to people and get loads of support, loads of amazing people on there to help out and talk to. And I think that's what people need. You can't bottle things up. You can't hide, and you can't, just to find that escapism is so important.
Yeah. And I think sometimes it's just nice for people to reach out and say, you know, for example, hi, Sid, are you okay? Or, you know, how's it going? And I found that actually
those magic words, just to ask someone if you're okay.
Yeah.
That do so much, you know, that is so important, just to reach out and say, oh, are you okay? You know, it's such a, I ask my staff all the time. They're probably fed up with me, but every day I ask each and every one of them if they're okay, because you don't know what you're going to get back.
No. And you don't know what morning they've had, or,
exactly,
you know, what evening they've had. And ultimately, I think, as you know, we set up the buddy system during lockdown with EY Matters. And, you know, and I had five managers that would call me each week. And they just loved the fact that they had somebody to talk to. Definitely. Because it was so lonely at the time. You've talked about well-being. Would you say that actually it's okay for you to be a bit selfish yourself? When I say selfish, that actually you switch off, you have a day at least where you basically recharge your own batteries, a bit of self, kind of, you know, self-care and nurture.
Yeah.
Do you think that works?
Definitely. Yeah. I 100%. I think it's so important. I think, you know, you can get so tied down and bogged down into work that it will catch up with you in the end. And everybody needs some time. Everyone needs, you know, some time to themselves and for their family. And you know, it's like you said,
you've got a family as well, haven't you, Steve?
Yeah, so I've got a little girl.
Yeah, because I've noticed that you take some fantastic pictures. And
photography is another escapism for me. You know, I love going out and taking photos, you know, to spend some time with my daughter. And it's, you know, those kind of things can get lost if you're too bogged down into work, if you're doing it at the weekends or evenings. You know, you would lose that you lose that bit of, you know, self-worth, really, that you need. Yeah. You know, it's so important, you know.
Okay, so we'll move on to question number three. So you've talked already about that, you know, you've been in early years now for 14 years, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
And, you know, for 10 of those, and you've come back onto the working farm nursery, which is even better. But what motivates you? What motivated you, firstly, to go into early years, but also what motivated you to become a leader within this sector?
I think with I found early years by accident, really. I wasn't the most academic at school as such. You know, I was pretty average in my grades, and I never really knew what I wanted to do. There wasn't really, you know, a lot of people go down a route straight after school, straight after college, and I didn't really know what I wanted to become. I was doing a lot of youth work at the time, around like 18, which, you know, I really enjoyed. You know, I loved being that person to help, you know, those teens and, you know, get them out of trouble and things like this. So that was like a route I was sort of heading towards.
Yeah.
And then I got given the opportunity to work at a holiday club, which was situated here. And it went really well. And, you know, I loved working with those school age children and, you know, just having fun. And I got given the opportunity to help out at the nursery. And I said that I would. And it's just sort of spiraled from there, really. And then you become so invested, and it became a real passion of mine then, that, you know, it's so important at this age. The 0 to 5 is so important for their development. It really sets them up ready for that education, and, you know, to be able to learn about that and you know, do more courses and things, it became a real passion then. And then it just all became about the children, and that's why we're in this profession. You know, I'm not in this job because I want to get to the top and be a big shot and earn loads of money. I'm in it because I love working with children, and I love watching them grow, and I love watching them develop, and I love seeing them go off to school, and then I love seeing them after school, and I love seeing, you know, you were part of that. You were part of their early years, and that's what it means to me, really.
So you mentioned, obviously, about, you know, paying condition, you know, you're never going to earn a lot, are you, in early years, but ultimately you get much more than just that financial gain. And you've just basically said all of those, really, that, you know, it is about making a difference. I think any public sector kind of early years kind of role, you know, and ultimately we're continually fighting, aren't we, for better paying conditions, and but like, I think it's really, really, like, how do your staff see that? Have you worked, have some of them that you're working with currently been there when you were there 10 years ago? So have they seen that transition from you being there, you know?
I've got three or four that were there, obviously, when I was around for the first time. I've got a lady working with me who was there when I first started, so she's been here for 14 years, so she's obviously seen that whole transition. So yeah, there's, like you said, there's a real fight on all the time for, like, increase of pay and to be valued, really, just like the educational system, like schools and things, but just to be valued like that teachers are, because essentially we are teachers, and we are, you know, we are teaching them, even in that early years. So to be, that's all we want to be, is to be valued, really, like that. And one day we might get one day.
Well, hopefully, because things are starting to change slowly.
You can see the shift. There's little changes happening, and, you know, this pandemic might have shown that as well, that how important we are, you know, to help other people go off to work, and then to see how we are teachers, and we are, you know, we are just like teachers in school, really.
You mentioned one thing, so it was off the back of my question, really. You said that obviously you still work with people when you first started. So if anybody's listening that potentially wants to progress into management, what how have you managed that? Because ultimately that's quite a big thing, managing people that potentially were your colleagues, you know, equal colleagues. So how have you managed that from going from nursery educator to, you know, manager?
It's my forefront for managing is staff wellbeing.
Right.
I think that's the most important thing. If staff are happy and they're being looked after and they're being cared for, then it just then transcends into their work. You know, they're going to be happy. They're going to be on top form as such. You know, we're all human beings at the end of the day, and we all care for each other. That's my ethos, really, is that their well-being is looked after. And yeah, it's strange, you know, becoming manager. And like I said, I'm now managing people that, you know, I started working with a long time ago. And and you get so many different varied people. You're working, you know, managing, you know, young adults that are just starting off in the sector. You're managing, you know, older adults that have been in the sector for, you know, 30, 40 years. Yeah, I've got another male working with me, which is great. And there's so many different people that you're working and managing with. Yeah. You do have to switch your style sometime as to how you're managing them.
But, yeah, so that was kind of my next question, really. Yeah. So how have you transitioned as an early years practitioner, professional, educator, teacher, whatever you want to call yourselves?
Yeah.
How have you transitioned from that? Like, what have you had to do? What kind of personal development have you had to go through to be able to make that transition?
I like to think I'm just myself, really.
Right.
I've always been, you know, like I said, we're all humans. We all look after each other, look after one another, and care for each other.
Yeah.
And I think you just got to do that in a professional status, really. You know, you've got to manage. You know, I brought in a lot of things that weren't happening. You know, the supervisions, the appraisals, and things like this that were just not as, you know, they weren't stable enough, and it meant that staff weren't getting their voice across.
Right.
And so, you know, you look at like my male practitioner, he just craves to be told he's doing the right thing, and he's very worried about how he's doing things. So yeah, I would deal with him, you know, a little bit different to say I would deal with someone who's much more confident. You know, you've got to change your style a little bit, but first and foremost, you're just there to be, you'd be there as a, you know, as a person for them to look at, to listen, to be there, to be approachable, to, you know, to be able to talk to someone. You know, that's so important for me. I think it's because I haven't had that as a manager.
Yeah.
You know, in the sector, I always had managers that, you know, they didn't really look after you as a person. They didn't think of you as a person.
Yeah.
And they were very selfish in the sense that, you know, it's always their way or no way.
Yeah.
To be brought up like that, it just makes you want to change things. And, you know, I want to do things my way, and it's not just, you know, you have to do it like this. It's their setting as well. It's their, they're the ones in there. They're the ones working with the children. Everyone needs to be involved in what we're doing. It's not just a matter of I'm the manager, let's do this.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's got their own say. Everyone's got their opinion.
So that kind of leads us on to question number four, which is you've talked about, I mean, you've used the word ethos. So how do you maintain a child-centered approach? First of all, through your own practice. So do you still go and work with the children? And then ultimately, how do you maintain that child-centered approach of your staff? And then ultimately, what is your ethos for the children and families of your nursery?
So I was very hands-on as a manager. That kind of changed with COVID. I felt like, you know, I was much more in the office doing policies and risk assessments, and you get very bogged down with that. But, you know, that's just the pandemic that we're in, and that has to happen. But I am out there as much as I can be, because essentially that's, as I've said before, you know, we're in this profession for the right reasons, and that's to be with the children. And you know, I love just being back out there again and, you know, like I said, getting my guitar out and having a good sing song. And yeah, that's why I wanted to do this job. So but yeah, our ethos is very much, you know, it's like I said, the outdoor element is key here. We've got the forest school. We've got 3 forest school trained staff. Mm-hmm. So we run that every day. And it's a very big thing of where we are, obviously, yeah, with the environment. And, you know, we're in a huge transition at the moment. So we're going down the sort of Montessori environment route. So we're going down the natural provisional stuff. So, again, it's so hard to transition. Like, it's very much, if you're in a school, it's very easy to change a classroom because you've got, you know, either, you know, a couple of hours at the end of the day, or you've got your holidays, your half terms. But it's so difficult naturally to change, do huge changes like that.
Especially
when there's been 14 years of resources and provision that's been the same, to dramatically change it is so hard. So it's going to be a good 18-month, you know, 2-year transition, I think. Yeah. We get that going, and we'll concentrate on different bits at a time. I've had some, you know, good communication with people on Twitter. It's such a good community to get ideas and to ask people about things and to get their sort of approach on it and how to do things. So again, that's such a good tool to use. So yeah, that transition is going to be hard and it's going to be long, but the staff are so excited and we're going down that route. I just want to go away from the sort of traditional how preschools used to be, like very, you know, colourful plastic type things, and I want to go very natural, because I think that fits our ethos, our environment of being on a farm, you know, the woodland aspect. So that's the kind of way we're going at the moment.
Well, that sounds absolutely idyllic, and I definitely would love to come and visit when I'm allowed to. And you know, any excuse to come down to that lovely part of the country. And then maybe come and see you and see the staff and the children. That'd be really, really nice.
Most definitely.
So that leads us on to our last question, which I ask everybody. So if I could grant you 3 wishes, what would they be?
This is the question I was most scared of.
Oh. What, you can't win the lottery. Well, you what can win the lottery, but, you know.
I would wish for recognition of the earlier sector from the high end people, which would lead on to, obviously, you know, more support in terms of funding and things like that, because it is a real issue. So that would be a definite wish. I'd wish for endless kindness in the world, especially in, you know, in the workplace and social media. You know, we still see it quite often on social media. There's always those few people that spoil it. So I think that would be a wish, for endless kindness. And some coffee on my desk.
Well, you need coffee, something stronger, obviously, of an evening, but you need coffee to keep you going, don't you? Sid, it's been an absolute pleasure listening to you, and I hope that you've enjoyed having a chat. And it's really, really nice to kind of hear and kind of picture what your nursery is all about. And it sounds absolutely child-centered and perfect. So keep up the great work.
Yeah, I'm very excited for you know, the transition and to progress to how I want the setting to be, really. So it's very excited. Hopefully this pandemic won't last too much longer and we can crack on.
Yeah, I hope so too. But thank you so much for joining Team Early Childhood Podcast.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
And it's been great catching up with you as well. So please, everybody, if you would like to share, make sure that you use hashtag Team Early Childhood. Give us your reviews on earlyyearsreviews.co.uk. And it's a goodbye from me, Aaron Bradbury. And thank you very much, Sid.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
Bye. Bye.